Hello and welcome to the Climbing Arborist podcast, episode 33, with Tom, Connor and I that make up the Grizzly Tree Experts crew. We summarise our week and talk about notable jobs. We talk about tree pruning and how to meet clients' expectations when a client initially asks for work that we're not comfortable in undertaking, some excessive pruning and that kind of thing, and how we're able to talk to some clients and hopefully convince them otherwise when explaining how pruning works and what we can and can't do in line with industry best practice. We also talk about an older tree removal that had quite a large cavity in it that Connor climbed, and he talks about how he was feeling during the climb, feeling a little uneasy from time to time. And then I also go into talking about how I feel about running a tree company and having guys work safely, and how it makes me feel as a tree owner, tree company owner, and not worrying so much about that dreaded thought of having to call somebody's family, their wife, their kids, to tell them their partner or dad has had an accident. So hope you enjoy this episode of the podcast. Thank you for tuning in as always, and enjoy the podcast. Now let me tell you a little something that might make your life as a business owner a whole lot easier. So I used to use Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel to run my business, send out quotes and invoices. And then I changed to Jobber Business Software, which a lot of you know about. It's an absolutely fantastic product. It makes my life running my business so much easier, so less admin time, which that's good because I hate admin. But one little thing that I love is that you can set a load of different automated email templates. And one of my favorites is the quote follow-up. So I set mine for 5 days later to follow up on a quote if I haven't heard back from the person. And that's enough time for them to get the quote, read the quote, think about the price, and probably forget about the quote. And so 5 days later is just a little reminder to say, hey, I'm here. If you've got any questions, I'm here to answer your questions. If you want to change the scope of the work, then you can do that. And it's amazing how many people that just prompts into thinking about the job again and then proceeding and approving the quote. So I get so many jobs from that follow-up email. So it's a great little tool. If you haven't tried Jobber, or if you don't even know what it is, then click the link in the description of this podcast and you can get a 14-day free trial. If you love it after using it for 14 days, then because you've clicked through the link, you'll get 20% off your first 6 months subscription. So go and try it today and I'm sure you will not regret it.
I got a loan at the bank, it's a big one. The only place you're going to see my name, I'm a local legend on a Friday night. Neon lights.
That's a perfect intro, mate. We'll keep that one.
Leave it on there.
Yeah, we'll keep that.
Nice one.
Do it.
Let's start with that. The job on Monday then, Cypress, the deadwood in the cypress tree. Mm-hmm. First of all, what were both of your opinions on, on that work that we did?
Yeah.
Removing all the dead wood. A little bit of weight reduction, but mainly the weight reduction was the dead wood because it was so dense.
Yeah.
Do you have any like opinions of if you feel like that work was good? It could have been different. Would you have thought anything else needed doing to that tree? Just from like maintenance, hazard, health, all that kind of stuff.
You can go, boss man.
Well, what I think is, obviously, it's a job to, when you haven't climbed a tree and been up a tree and removed a lot of limbs and heavy limbs as well, it's a job to get an appreciation of how much weight those branches are supporting. And those branches were huge, like them lower limbs. And so when you said like weight reduction, I was thinking, well, they're quite short as well. I was like, are they going to fail? Is that a hazard? The limbs were a bit strange, or whatever you want to mention, like just explain how the tree was. But yeah, it was really big limbs, but they were quite short. So in my, when I first arrived, I was like, I can't ever see one of them failing. So I don't know what
you... did you feel like, because from the trunk to like those low ones, from the trunk to the very end, like say near where it was touching the house,
mm-hmm.
what was that, like 25 feet long?
Yeah, maybe not quite as long as that.
Yeah, which like I felt, and especially because it had all the tension wood on, mm-hmm. like, where like because it was so heavy, and the branch wouldn't look like that if there wasn't like
yeah.
so much weight on it, and those okay. those branches were really elongated. They were, I don't yeah. know, they were like really yeah. like long, yeah, elongated like oval shape.
So you're saying that's response that, to the weight. But then, but let me fast forward. Is yeah. after you've done it and you pruned so much dead out, and I'd obviously put it through the chipper or stacked it, I was like, shit, there was a lot of weight in there, yeah. and I suppose I'm getting a bit ahead of myself, but it looked really good once you had done that as well. And I suppose obviously taking that weight out, it just sort of lifted the canopy a bit.
Yeah.
But going, like starting again, think like when I first sort of looked at the tree, yeah, I was like, sort of, did it need doing from a hazard perspective? I was a bit unsure. But then also, obviously, we were removing it from the house, which was quite straightforward. That was for clearance. And then, yeah, like you say, removing all the dead, because you could tell there'd been loads of raccoons up there. And yeah, I know some people aren't gross. Keen at having yeah. sort of animals sort of nested in there and stuff. So, yeah, I think, yeah, it was relatively, yeah, I don't really know what else to say about the job, to be honest. But, yeah. yeah.
I love, but, so I'll just give a brief insight to the job before you yeah. say anything, Connor. So it was a huge Lawson cypress tree. Looked like it had never been pruned before. It had never been topped, which is really quite rare for in the Pacific Northwest, because pretty much every conifer of any age has been topped. But it was actually quite short, and I don't know if you'd call it stocky. That's how I would like refer stout, to it. Yeah. Yeah, it was very like really chunky at the base.
Yeah, it was big.
And then the trunk tapered off, you know, really nicely, didn't it? Had a good taper all the way up.
Yeah.
It's probably maybe 80 feet tall to the very tip. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe not even, like 70 feet.
Yeah, give or take.
But yeah, like never been pruned by the looks of things, apart from the lower branches being removed at some point. And it was just a mass of dead wood in the like interior of the tree, which yeah. you would expect from a tree like that, really, because yeah, you know, it's not getting any light, so all the internal branches and foliage dies off. So yeah, that's it. And then like I was saying, there was like three or four main low limbs were definitely like the longest, and yeah, maybe 20 feet long, but really elongated from all that which way around is it? This is going to sound stupid, but tension wood and compression wood.
So compression will be on the underside.
On the underside. So it's tension wood on a conifer
yeah,
tree.
And that's
yeah.
where conifer trees has
yeah.
where it yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't know, I had a mind blank on that one. yeah, so I had like so much tension wood on the top side, and yeah, that was the job.
But yeah, it had loads of breakages as well. Like, there was quite a lot of branches that were snapped out, and especially up top, there was a couple that we had to, like, cut up and bring them back down. They weren't tops, they were just kind of big branches that had snapped, so it was good to get them down as well. They were more of a hazard than anything else, I suppose. And then, yeah, like, the amount we took out versus what it looked like as well, like, it didn't really look like we took out loads, but the amount we took out was like a lot, so it was yeah, it was definitely.
I think what I'm finding is it's hard to envisage what you're going to achieve and what it's going to look like. So I find that hard to picture it, if you know what I mean. I look at a tree and think, oh, it looks fine.
Yeah, yeah. And then you end up taking out a serious amount of debris, and it's
yeah,
it didn't it looked so much better because it was
yeah.
like more air and all was getting through it. So mm-hmm. yeah,
yeah.
But
yeah, so the, I mean, obviously, one thing is aesthetics, especially for residential areas and trees in the urban environment, people, well, some people want their trees to look nice, but I think this was more, this was also coming from a safety standpoint, in the fact that I don't know if I was so concerned with the amount of dead in there, although there was a lot of dead and there was a lot of broken limbs, broken, like all the way through the canopy, really, like low down, like until about the top quarter, there was not really any deadwood, was there?
But no, no deadwood.
Yeah, the lower.
There was a couple of snap branches, but no deadwood.
Yeah, so the lower three quarters was just absolutely full, and I didn't even imagine that much would come out of it. But then on the flip side of that is, so I got a message from a friend of mine, Sam Smith, who is over in New Zealand, and he sent me a private message, and he's like just wanted to ask you a couple of questions on that cypress job that I posted a picture of. And he was like, he'd seen an article or he'd been to a talk presentation from a guy that had said a lot of dead wood in trees actually can help dampen you know, the wind blowing through and all that kind of stuff, where so sometimes removing so much debris from internals can change the dynamic of a tree depending on the environment, and if you've got if there's a lot of wind coming through and that kind of stuff, which I totally agree with. And I'd actually been to a talk with Julian Dunster before, and he'd brought up the fact that they did some testing on some Douglas fir trees, which in the Pacific Northwest, Douglas fir, native tree, always getting big limb failure, whether it's half the limb snapping off or the whole thing snapping off, and due to excessive weight. And so in the Pacific Northwest, especially among potential clients, I often get called in and they're we want to spiral prune, whatever that means, we want to spiral prune, which is a ridiculous term, but this term has kind of picked up traction. What they mean by that is they want it thinned. And Dunster was saying, if you thin Douglas fir trees, they've done some testing on it, some research, and it's actually worse for Douglas firs because they almost use each branch as has this dampening effect. So as the branches move up and down in the wind, if it's a heavy wind, they'll hit the branch above or below it, and then it'll stop how far they can
sway.
Up and down. But if you thin it and you remove a bunch of branches on that particular species of tree, there's there's less chance it's going to hit something to dampen the movement, and then that's when it'll snap with the excessive movement. And so Sam brought this up, and it was a similar thing that they'd had in New Zealand, where there was these old macrocarpa trees, cypress trees, and they'd had been full of dead for years, and then they'd completely removed all the dead wood, and then over the next few years, their huge limb failures, breakages, and then even one or two of them had to be removed, I think he said. But I think he said they might have been quite exposed, those trees. Mm-hmm. And so there's definitely a huge point to that, and real valid point. But I felt that with the removal of all that dead wood in that tree, each small little dead branch or each little kind of snap dead branch that we took out, because it was dead, it wasn't that much weight, but because of the volume that we took out, I was shocked at how much we took out of it. And I do feel after we'd finished that job that had removed so much weight off of those big, heavy, long limbs. And so we ended up taking not a lot of live growth out of that tree at all. I maybe took four or five small live branches off of the tips of some of those longest limbs, but other than that, because we were removing all that dead, I was just this is enough, because this is enough weight accumulatively.
But it wasn't that high up either, so it wasn't we were as well, it was in a residential area, so there wasn't going to be a crazy amount of wind coming through the tree or anything like that either. So, like, yeah, like I said, it would have an effect, definitely, if you took out all the dead weight and it was in, like, a wide open area where, like, wind was just going to run through it. Whereas that tree, I don't think, I think it was more beneficial than anything to get that, all that weight out, because, like you said, there was so much, there was so much pressure on them lower limbs just with the accumulative weight, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other, like, so moving on to, I suppose, yeah, moving on to today's job, just kind of tying in these pruning jobs, is that as an arborist, we're providing, like, tree care and tree services for residents in an urban environment, and that's why, you know, that's why people call us in, because if a tree was out in the open in the middle of a huge garden, farm, forest, whatever, like, the tree doesn't need anything doing, which is the ideal. Like, trees should be left alone, but in the urban environment, that's why we have a trade, that's why we've trained to do this job, so we can provide these services. And it's all, I do find it hard, because I know in my mind what, you know, trees want to be left alone, and then you get the opposite end of the scale is a client comes to you and they want to absolutely mutilate a tree because they have no knowledge whatsoever. And then you get like a middle ground where the client's really into trees and they have knowledge of trees and they know what they want and they know what's good for a tree. And it's trying to manage those clients that are less educated, and you're trying to help them kind of meet goals that seem unrealistic, and but still trying to work within the confines of like industry best practice and the local municipal bylaws, and yeah, and sometimes, like, I don't know, sometimes we have to really put our foot down and say no to certain clients that really have no idea what they're allowed to do and what's good for trees, what's bad for trees. So you have to educate them, but without trying to overwhelm them with, like, you know, industry jargon and you know, biology and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, some people, it's hard to say, just want something done. And maybe like reduction in height, reduction in spread. And I feel like if we can do that for somebody, and we know hopefully how the tree's going to respond, and we can do it in the best possible way, then that person is going to get, we're going to compromise on what they're looking to achieve. And we're going to try and provide the best service possible. And coming from Europe, where we did like a lot of canopy reductions, even like pollarding on some trees, like street trees and that kind of thing, I'm very familiar with like reducing the entire canopy of a tree, whereas it's far less done in North America. And I suppose especially Canada, where we live, because a lot of the more common trees are Douglas fir cedar trees, which you can't really, well, you definitely can't do the height reduction on, but, and so I don't know, I just want to see what you guys think about trying to manage client expectations and sometimes maybe doing some pruning that ultimately you don't feel is the very best thing for the tree, but to be able to meet somebody's goals, it is like an acceptable way of doing something.
I think that's one thing. Obviously it's completely new to me, relatively new to you, but if Dan's always there, he'll deal with that,
let him figure it out. Yeah,
but I think it's a good exercise, although probably both of us will hate it, dealing with the clients, managing their expectations. So on this job this morning, Dan had told us what we were going to do. The client was likely to ask to do more, like to top the tree. So we were sort of feeling we weren't going to be doing that. We went out to speak to them and they came out again, didn't they? So like top the tree. And
yeah.
I think it's like a good exercise to say no, like you say, and it's quite difficult to at the end of the day they're still paying the bill, so it's kind of like you kind of you want to give them what they want, but that's again against everything that you know and poor practice. So it's a really fine line to walk sometimes.
They don't even understand what's possible either. They just like have like an idea in their head that you're just going to like shrink the tree and it's going to look like a tree, whether it's like today they wanted it topped, but they wanted it topped like quite far down, didn't they? It just would have been a stick at that stage almost. It would have looked absolutely awful.
Yeah, but sort of say how it went. They came out sort of midway through the job. Connor had already done quite a little bit, like remove, like sort of a little bit of a thin so he could get around the tree and lifted up some of the lower branches. And I showed her, because the tree had been topped, I showed her like it's been topped and now we've got this poor branch structure and all the issues that that was going to have with it, like weak attachments and stuff like this. And I was like, this has sort of caused the problem sort of thing. It's very dense. You've got a lot of limbs sort of all tight in there. And then sort of once we explained everything to her, and you can't remove too much of live foliage as well, because obviously you're going to hurt the tree. And she came round to it and they were really pleased, weren't they?
Yeah, they were chuffed at the end of it, yeah.
But at the start, they were like, we want topped like by a third. We want it all taken in, and it was on a pine. So obviously that wasn't going to be possible.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they just wanted to hack the tree, and then you kind of gave them what we expected we were going to do, and then we came to a good agreement, I suppose. But yeah, it's definitely difficult dealing with people who want like a certain thing done to the tree that just isn't like industry best practice. It's just like borderline like pollarding a tree that you should never pollard sometimes, and you just have to explain to them what like you think is the best way to go about trying to achieve their goals, but then like you said, doing what we think's best for the tree as well. Like it's always good to have own input rather than
I think what was really good though, you put your foot down at the start, you went, we're not topping it, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. So then I feel like you set your stall out early on what we're not willing to do.
Because when they first like got in touch with me, I think I remember the first email was they wanted to see if they could remove the tree, which they definitely couldn't because there was nothing wrong with it.
Fine.
It wasn't causing any damage to anything. There was no way that they would ever get a permit to remove the tree. So then following that, they were like, right, we'll want to top it by a third. And I think I'd almost like there's a lot of clients where or potential clients where I get these emails and I almost feel like they can be wasting my time because they want something so far from what we'll be willing to do and the service we'll be willing to offer that I'm just so blunt and I say, look, we can't top the tree. The most we can do, prune it away from the house, remove some of the lower branches, raise the canopy and try and, you know, get some more light into the garden, which was a little bit of something that they'd mentioned, and remove some of the dead wood, possibly thin out where it had been topped in the
light
past.
Into the garden that was all concrete and slabs.
Yeah. more light onto the concrete, and a lot of the time I find like the more blunt and to the point I am with some people, especially when they're asking for something so far out of the realm of what I want to do, is that you almost gain their respect by telling them, look, this is bad for the tree and we can do this, which won't be anywhere near as bad for the tree. Obviously any pruning is bad to an extent, but you know, you have to manage trees as well, so I understand that's why we do it. And I always have this, like, I've been doing this job for a long time now and I still have a bit of like an internal battle about what I'm willing to go as far as what people want to do and like compromise. Because if I didn't compromise with anybody, then I wouldn't do any work.
Yeah.
But when I say compromise, like definitely not meaning I'd be willing to do work that I don't agree with. Sometimes you understand, like, as as people owning properties and owning houses, owning buildings, having all this expense, you know, that they've poured into their mortgage, you can understand if a tree is huge and it's close to the house and you can visibly see roots going through their lawn and then underneath their concrete and towards their foundations, you can understand the worry that people have and they want to do something about it and, you know, do something hopefully to prevent measures of damage and stuff. Mm. So I completely get that. So I do try and manage what they want to do, but also, you know, stick to what I know and the knowledge that I've gained over the years and just try and give the best service that we can while still being able to, you know, try and help meet their goals.
So. Yeah, it's hard as well because, like, even though we clearly love trees, it's not like everybody loves trees. So, like you were saying, people might be afraid of their house, and a tree's the thing that they're afraid of that might hit their house. And, like, if they don't care about trees, they're obviously gonna want it like reduced or removed or whatever. So you're always like battling towards people who just may not really care about the tree, and they just want you to sort it out so it's not going to hit their house, basically, which isn't great sometimes. But yeah, people are difficult.
Yeah, job would be so much easier if it wasn't for the clients.
If we just decided what to do, we'd be the best in the world.
I don't think you'd ever prune a pine tree again, would you?
No, it's not fun. Not when they've been topped. You just can't move.
So what did you learn this week, Tom? Anything?
What did I learn this week? So first, the cypress where you're deadwooding or removing some of the deadwood. When you got two climbers and wasn't loads of room, that was pretty rubbish. Like, that was stressing me out, like having just debris everywhere and thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to get through this, and managing that. And then you kind of sort of said to me, it's the way it goes. Like, you'll catch up when this happens, when that happens, and
yeah, there'll be a break. Just trying to keep on top.
So that was sort of I learnt from the first day. Got up in a tree, didn't I? Spurred up about 10 foot in a tree, which was an experience.
Yeah.
That was good fun. It was. Like all these things, I know it's going to be like when you sort of watch other people do it, you think, oh yeah, so he's sort of got his weight there, or he's doing this, or he's doing that now. And then you actually try and do it, and it's like, ah, it's not quite as simple as... But no, it felt after like maybe 5-10 minutes, it felt like a more comfortable like move in and stuff like that. So that was good. What else?
How did you find it, like... How weird did it feel, like, being on the spurs?
It was just difficult to know, like, how close or far away should I be from the tree, like, my body. That was, like, one thing. I was like, I felt like I was quite far. I know, initially, like, trying to, like, sort of get the slack in or cinch it up so, like, could get in closer to the tree to actually get up it. Like, that was the first thing, wasn't it? I couldn't even get my...
Oh, yeah, tend the prussic to
tend the prussic, the yeah. Wouldn't move with like one hand, so I had to use both hands, and it was just awkward, like reaching over. But then, yeah, you showed me sort of. So then, once you get up on the tree, it's sort of not wasn't too bad. It felt pretty comfortable, but I imagine after a few hours, probably being up there, it's not quite as comfortable. Yeah. So.
Well, it's good to hear you say that it felt comfortable after, you know, you were on the pole what for like. 10 minutes just
yeah
because we'd taken the older tree down, and I'd said to Connor, just leave that about 15 foot high, and
yeah,
we'll just let Tom get on some spurs and just get the fit. Like, the reason why I wanted to do it and not even really give you long on the spar pole is just to give you that feeling to, you know, put the spurs on, put the harness on, stand on the spurs on the pole, move around a little bit, shuffle around side to side, just so you could kind of see what it felt like. Mm. And then after like 10 or 15 minutes, come down. And then now you kind of know what it feels like, and you'll maybe think about it a little bit more. And then you'll maybe, like, if you see Connor or I on spurs next time, you'll be watching it and you'll think about it differently, or you'll take more notice to like the smaller things, like the way we tend our slack on the lanyard to as the, you know, pole gets smaller and smaller, and we need to be closer into the stem. And
one thing that was like, there was a couple of things to mention for anyone that's like maybe gonna do it, or like moving around the tree felt like a little bit unnerving the first few times, like going side to side, and then also coming back down when you first said, right, now come back down. I was like, oh, this seems a bit weird.
We're going backwards.
Yeah. So that was like one thing. But then the other thing I kept doing was putting this, like, the spur in so deep, because I was like, just wanted to be sure. I was like hammering them home. And then Dan was like, take your hands off the trunk. And I was putting, I wasn't, because like I was like sort of scared, but I literally had to put my hands on the trunk to get to pull my spurs out. Yeah. And then like I think when I started going a little bit looser, like not quite so hard, it was, and like I could keep my hands on my lanyard, and it was, and then it got a lot, just for, I suppose it was just after a few minutes just getting more and more comfortable doing it, and then you were sort of giving me a few tips and then sort of letting me just sort of go up and down.
It was funny though, because you knew that you were hammering the spurs now, because you was, like I said to you, right, because you kept having your hands on the trunk, and I was like, take your hands off the trunk, maybe, and put them on your lanyard, and keep them on your lanyard, because as you're moving up and down in the future, you'll have them on your lanyard, because you'll be flipping up, and like that's what you do. And so I said, just kind of rest them on your lanyard and keep comfortable like that. And then that's when you were like, so I'm probably hammering these spurs in too hard.
Get them out.
And I was like, well, you probably are, because you're going to be nervous. So like, this is the first time you've done it. And you're like, yeah, and that's why I'm putting my hands on the trunk. Like, it's not because I'm like worried I'm going to fall. Yeah. It's because I need to push away.
I saw all the marks from like the trunk of where you had been going up and where I'd been going up. Like yours, just like sort of tiny little holes. Then mine's like massive craters in the tree.
Yeah. But the fear has to be there as well to keep you safe. So it's good. But yeah, you're going to learn quickly that when you hammer them in, they'll get stuck.
Yeah, but yeah, it is good. Like Colin just said, fear is such a good thing to keep you in check, really. And obviously, the more that you do it, the more experienced you become. Fear kind of creeps away, and then the ideal is that fear will only creep in when there's actually like reason for it to be there. But there was reason for it to be there, because you'd never done it before. So you don't want to fall even 2 feet off the ground. You don't want to fall. And so,
yeah, because I can just see you kissing that trunk if you do gaff out, and then you sort of slipping down So yeah, that was really good and positive. And then also I've done we did a little bit of bit more rigging. Obviously I didn't have much experience, but just doing more and more of that, just getting comfortable. It's just like, it was mainly branches, wasn't it? So it was nothing too heavy. But yeah, just getting used to being on a rope, and then the processes of once you've lowered a limb, sort of pulling it out of the way, getting the not getting it off the tree and then sending it back up, like just little things like that. The more I can see, like the more and more you do it, it's getting comfortable. But when you first sort of start lowering them branches and they sort of come swinging down, like you're sort of getting used to it.
Yeah. And
sorry, I've jumped ahead to them tree removals.
No. It's all good. Yeah, we did a bit of removal, a few removals this week. Well, you guys did one, and then we did those two older removals. But yeah, you'd have seen with the rigging, there was one point where on the first day when I was climbing, Connor, you rigged the piece down, and Connor grabbed, like, it was quite a long trunk, and you probably noticed that, like, he brought it all the way through the garden, and that's because, like, you're holding a lot of that weight, and so it's best to maneuver that piece as far in the direction that you want to get that going until you're fighting the rigging rope. And so Connor, like, took it from the garden we were working in all the way through to the garden you were rigging from, and in the direction, you know, the chipper was. And then on the day where Connor was climbing in the alder removal, some of those branches were coming down, and we were like pulling them out and keeping the weight on the rigging line, and then like kind of bringing the butt end round to face like where we were taking him out, and it's just like trying to
manipulate it in your favor.
Like. Yeah, make the rigging rope work for you. Like, so let it keep as much of the weight of the stuff that you're rigging down, and then manipulate it in a way where you get it facing the way you want. You get it as far towards the chipper as you can get it without like having to fight the
but
the
even like line. Anticipating, so like that's a relatively small branch or that's a big branch, like kind of getting an idea of what the weight's going to be, because we didn't have it going for a porter wrap. And obviously sometimes when kind of cuts a piece, I feel like that first little drop, you kind of want it to drop a little bit out of the way of the climber.
Yeah,
because there was a couple of times where sort of held it pretty tight and then sort of the branch sort of swings back in. It just looks, I don't know, like it doesn't fill me with, I just have that little bit of worry. But then once I'd done it a few times, let the weight take it down, and then as it starts coming down the ground, then you sort of slow it up.
Yeah, which are even for the alder that I did when Dan rigged the top, like I don't think he touched the rope until it got like right beside the ground, and then you put a little bit of tension on it. It's just, I suppose the more you do it, the more you understand, like, the weight of the branch and how much you need to just let it run.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, all that is definitely going to come with experience.
Yeah.
And I think if ever there comes a time where we're doing a rigging and it's like, if this goes wrong, somebody's going to get hurt, then we either completely change how we're going to rig, or we take a smaller piece, or I say to Connor, right, you do this rigging because I'm a bit worried that if it's not released at the right time or whatever, then it could go wrong. But everything we've done so far, like, there's not really been, there hasn't been a danger of even we were talking about last week when you rigged that piece and then it caught the rope and then dragged you, like, even stuff like that, there was never a danger of anything happening, like the branch like breaking anything, like, you know, even there was never a chance that the branch was going to hit you and fall on your head or whatever. Like, so all of that's like really good learning experience to rig those pieces where there's not really much at stake, even if it does go wrong in the sense of like the person who's rigging it doesn't do it correctly. Like, whereas taking that top for Connor, because Connor was a little bit wary of, you know, of the cavity in the tree, I knew that I wanted to make it as smooth as possible for Connor and not have that like feeling of like it's snatching on the tree and like stopping dead. But apart from that one, everything else that you rigged wasn't really.
I feel like it's a job though that you can tell me all you want to tell me until you've done it.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah. You get the feel for it.
And even like just holding the rope, I think I might have cheap gloves, but like, and like letting it run while, like, I suppose I haven't really spoken to you about it, like letting a rope run through your hands obviously creates a lot of heat.
Yeah.
It's like,
you don't want to do it with no gloves. I've done it with no gloves a couple of times and you suffer after. It's terrible.
Yeah. But I had, yes, but then like, I suppose like you say, the gloves are there for that. Maybe it's just because they were cheap ones. They're like not doing a very good job, but it's like, is that normal? Should I just be letting it run through? Should I be passing it? Like, what's? I suppose it's smoother if you let it run through, but
yeah.
Well, don't worry about the gloves.
Yeah, don't.
Get better gloves.
We'll just let it run through.
Yeah, I can buy some gloves. You just don't want to do it to your hands.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, like, when we can use the porter wrap, we'll use the porter wrap. But on those older trees, like, pretty much everything we were rigging was only small. The branches, and it wasn't anything too heavy, so it wasn't really necessary to be using the porter wrap. And especially so when you're using a porter wrap, obviously you can only tension the porter wrap up as much as you can, but then as a piece comes round, you can't pull it anymore.
No.
So you know that we did that one piece where I tip tied it, and I said to you, look, I'm gonna face this like towards you and I'll start to cut it, and then you just keep pulling as much as you can, trying to take up the slack as it comes around. So you couldn't do that technique with a porter wrap because you can't continue to like pull it up.
Mm-hmm.
So there are definitely Yeah, definitely benefits. And I think all of those limbs that we did, if we'd have had it through the port wrap, even with like the minimum amount of wraps,
it would have just been too much friction.
You wouldn't have been able to let it
do anything.
I mean,
it would have moved, but it would have moved
very slowly, so it would have still kind of give you a little bit of shock loading.
Yeah.
Like when it first caught. Yeah, so I think, like you say, the rigging is just going to come with experience, and we just won't do any rigging, like I say, that is going to put anybody in danger or anything. And so if there's anything slightly complex, like early on, then yeah, I'll do it or Connor will do it, and then we'll just explain like why and what we're doing. But
yeah.
Yeah, we got there's a couple of jobs coming up actually, where we should be able to do some pretty interesting stuff.
Okay.
There's a Scots pine tree removal that we're doing that you and I, and we'll do like just a simple speed line, which we haven't done yet, even though I know you've seen videos of it and stuff, but that'll be good to just get more familiar with stuff like that really, and just see the benefit of not having to drag branches in and out of garden through a like narrow gateway when you can speed line it over some fences and stuff. What about you, Connor?
What about me?
Anything of note from this week? What did you learn? What did you feel like you made any mistakes? Did you feel like you did something really well that you actually like surprised yourself at? Or
No, not particularly. It was a good week though, but that alder removal that had that like pocket of rot that I kind of scared me a little bit, because it was like the rot was just underneath the main stem that I was going to be tying into and then removing obviously at the end, which was the top that we were talking about, that had me a bit nervous. But like it had loads of good like included bark and all that kind of stuff, like it was solid. It's just when you see rot in a tree, especially because I'm still quite new to tree work, you're kind of like, oh, is this going to be safe, or am I gonna, like when I get up to the very top, is it going to move? Like you have all these ideas that run through your head. It was kind of like when you were explaining to me that like irrational fears, like about people like who are afraid to fly and stuff, like I come up with an irrational fear in my mind almost, like that it was too dangerous to go up to the top, or it was too sketchy, even though you had been up and you'd seen the little pocket of rot, and you're like, yeah, it should be fine. Like, so when I had done that, then I was not proud or anything like that, but I was just like happy that like I was done it and realized it. Well, it made me just a bit more aware of like what you can do, and that like, yeah, it's not all as bad as you think, I suppose. But yeah, it was good. I feel I'd done it like quite efficient. It was just like a tree stem alder with one little pocket of rot. It was fine.
Yeah.
Didn't seem too bad.
Yeah, no, I thought you did really well, like really smooth job. And yeah, I could tell obviously from what you were saying on the center, and you like, you're obviously a little bit wary of that pocket, and I'd been up there and seen it when I did my aerial inspection, and it was like when you climb up there, you know, it was at that main union where those three stems kind of all came out from, and there was,
and that back stem as well, the big one, had all of the weight on the back side of where that like that rot was, so that made me even more like apprehensive. I was like, oh shit, like there's so much weight on the wrong side, and it just kind of it made me just a little bit apprehensive.
You went a bit quiet, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. I was just trying to think and not be afraid almost, but like even though I knew it was fine and like you were telling me that it was okay, it's just it's quite hard to
it's hard when you're in that situation, and then you've climbed above it, and then your brain starts running away with you, like telling you, or you know, every little bit of movement that your weight is on the tree and it's wobbling around, and you're like, oh god.
And I know, because I even said to you, like I was like in my mind even a little bit, I was like, I wonder should I just do the whole tree, but like let Dan do the last step, and I was like, but then I'm gonna watch him do it and it's gonna be perfectly fine, nothing's gonna go wrong, which means that I could have just done it. So I just kind of got on with it and did it. But it's still, yeah, it's just true lack of experience with dealing with trees that like have a form of decay or maybe something wrong with them that makes me think about like the worst case scenario. Even though everything went perfectly fine, it was almost like the rot wasn't even there. It was easy. But
I mean, there's, you know, you have a genuine point about trees, like trees that have decay in them, trees that are dead. There's definitely, you need to be wary of it. Yeah. And it's like how much, you know, education and knowledge can you put into what's happened, like how extensive that defect is. Looking at the species of tree, looking at everything around the tree that's affecting it, and trying to put all those things together and make up your mind whether that tree is safe or not. But then as soon as you climb above a defect, your brain then starts telling you all the things that could go wrong with it, and it's trying to separate your knowledge. Like if you weren't to climb above that, and like, right, how safe do I think this tree is, how structurally sound is it, and then when you climb above that, your opinion's going to change a little bit just because you then are putting yourself above it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like we were saying earlier, like fear is a good thing to keep you in check.
Yeah,
but then through experience of doing removals and climbing trees that aren't like, because not every tree is going to be like perfect structure, perfect health.
Yeah.
And a lot of the trees that we remove, we're removing them because they do have defects or because they are dead.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, yeah, it is getting that experience. And it's a funny thing with trees because they are, you know, a living entity, a living thing. So it's not like we were saying the other day, it's not a man-made structure. It's not a man-made rated anchor point that you're using. And so it is all down to judgment and knowledge rather than somebody certifying that anchor point is fine. They've been there before and they've said, yeah, this can hold, you know, 50,000 pounds or something. Like nobody has been up into a tree and said, right, this anchor point is good for, you know,
whatever,
however many thousand pounds. So it's definitely knowledge, experience, just time climbing, knowledge of species and stuff like that. Which
I think on the day though, you did say where the decay was, there was a lot of sort of reaction growth or wood in like that was pretty sound. So that was what sort of, I don't know, gave you more confidence that the tree was good to climb.
Yeah.
Did you say?
Yeah. It showed good reaction wood, and the reaction wood around a wound is generally known to be stronger than just the normal, I don't know, what would you say, normal wood?
Mm. And yeah, the back stem was, when I was chunking it down, was all solid wood anyway, so it didn't, like none of the decay seeped into that stem at all.
Yeah.
So it was fine.
Well, have you taken down any dead trees?
Well, that one on Tuesday was stone dead.
Yeah, the one on Tuesday.
Couldn't have been any deader. But not like, well, also the maple was dead.
Maple was dead.
Yeah.
So yeah, the last 2 weeks you have taken down some dead trees.
Yeah, but like, again, it's just different kinds of decay that you see in different trees, and I'm just trying to like learn as much as I possibly can about it as I go. So now I know, or from what I've seen and removed for the next maybe alder that I do, I'll be like, right, okay, well this is something similar, so maybe my fear will go down and I'll know a little bit more about it. But yeah, I haven't removed like a crazy amount of dead trees.
What was your process in that alder? Because you did have like this little bit of worry, did you make sure when you moved around it was, you weren't as like jerky or aggressive or, you know, making sudden movements? Were you like, were you really aware of, you know, spurring up?
Yeah, I was just hypersensitive, especially then when I got to the the very top of that stem, and you were like, it's starting to die up at the top there. It was kind of, you could see it was starting to wilt away a little bit. That's, and it was getting a little bit shaky. I mean, I was like, I knew it was fine, but there's still that little bit in you that's like, fuck, this is a little bit scary. But I mean, again, for me being quite new as well, that's good, because then it keeps me making sure that all my carabiners are closed, making sure that like my system's on properly. Like, just, yeah, it just makes you recheck everything and make sure that what you're doing is safe and you're not doing anything stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was good, man. It was like, yeah, everything super safe. Yeah, I mean, I'm always impressed the fact that you were trained when you learnt. You learnt to always do everything in the safe manner. So you've never, I'm never having to like watch you and be like, put your lanyard on. And like it's so nice for me to have somebody who's like, you know, only a few years in, but not have to watch them like a hawk to make sure that they're using the saw with two hands and they're using a lanyard.
That's because I don't know any different.
Yeah, you don't know any different. Yeah. And like, and when we start teaching Tom to climb, like I already mentioned to you the other day, didn't I? I was like, right, when we're making cuts, we're always going to lanyard in, and if you know this from the start, that's just like what we do, you won't know any different, and so you'll generate your climbing style and your knowledge and how you approach the climb knowing that you're going to have to lanyard on for making cuts. So you'll because I said to you, didn't I, when people go from not using a lanyard and making cuts with a chainsaw to then trying to transition, it's so frustrating. It's such a process, because they're used to not having to to think ahead about where they're going to place the lanyard, how many pruning cuts they can make from one like tying, or from the one position where they put the lanyard. Whereas when you learn to climb, you'll always think of, right, where am I going to put my lanyard, because I've got all these pruning cuts to make. And so you'll already kind of leapfrog that whole process. I feel you'll never know, because you never know otherwise. Like Connor, he never complains that he feels slow, because
I'm always slow. Yeah. I'm not fast. Well, yeah.
Yeah, but like even when you say to me, "Oh God, oh, was you know, did I get that done efficiently or quick enough, or like you feel like you were slow or whatever," you say those things, you know, from time to time, just and for whatever reason. But you never say, "Oh God, you know, it's because all that lanyarding on I was doing and all that."
Yeah,
all that two-handed cutting I was doing.
Like,
you never say that.
Yeah.
And it just like it goes to show that like the way that Connor works, the way that I work, the way that like we all work, we can get the jobs done efficiently, safely, without like cutting corners and you know, and putting ourselves at risk, you at risk, whatever. So yeah, it'd be good. Like.
Mm-hmm.
Getting you up in a tree, and for me as like the company owner, to know that I have people working with me that are working safely and not doing stupid things and not putting themselves in danger and not putting me in danger, it's one less thing that I have to worry about. You know, as a company owner, like I never ever want to get a phone call from you, from Connor, saying somebody's cut themselves, like with anything, like whether it's chainsaw, silky, that they're in hospital, or they've broken their arm, their leg, or like any of that kind of stuff. It's, and like that's like that's almost like the primary thing now. With having you guys, is some people have worked with me as like contractors in the past. And I've seen them do things, and I just cringe when I see it, and then it makes me panic. I'm like, oh God, like what would I do if something happened here? And or even working with other companies and seeing people in a certain situation, it's not it's not even that I want to make sure that you're, I just want to be a stickler about safety. It's that I never want to have to make the phone call to 911. I never want to make that phone call, like to Connor's girlfriend or to your wife, to say, you know, Tom's gone to hospital, this has happened. Like,
well, it's the same with the glasses as well. Like, when I started working with you, you're like, glasses, you just have to wear them with no ifs, ands, or buts, because you're like, I don't want to be working on site with you one day, and next thing you know, you're going to be blind because you weren't wearing glasses. And I put up a fight for a little while, but at least now I wear them. It's good.
You kept pretending to lose them.
Yeah. It's just, it's important. It's a very unsafe job if you're unsafe. Like, you have to be safe.
Yeah.
I don't know. What, maybe while we're on safety, maybe it's one thing to think, talk about is the, like, traffic control and pedestrian control, like the job on Monday. Obviously, that guy stopped and said, should have sidewalk closed signs out. But even so, like, I don't know. Sometimes I assume, like, we're obviously working, we're doing tree work, we've got cones set out, we've got caution tape, yet still people walk under it. So it's like, as well as us being in danger, we put other people in danger and not having sufficient, like, sometimes I think you can sort of gloss over it because it's all very, oh, it's obvious we're doing work here, like, but people do just walk through it.
Yeah,
it's like, especially you put caution tape out and you just assume that people are gonna see that and they're gonna walk the other way,
not across, walk around it.
Yeah, across the road, not duck underneath it. And it's actually, I really appreciated that guy stopping, because at first, like, we were on the back of the truck, weren't we? And he pulled up next to us in the middle of the road and he was like, oh, guys, do you just, you know, I think you should get some sidewalk clothes. Did he say, oh,
sidewalk clothes?
Yeah, he said, I think you should get some printed up or just get some from somewhere. He said, all you got to do is put them out, because even with your caution tape and your cones, people still won't listen and they still won't take any notice, and it'll put you in jeopardy, it'll put them in jeopardy, and you don't want that to happen. And I really appreciated him stopping, because it dawned
on me as well when he said,
yeah,
like, yeah, the smallest little things, people can make claims, it's your, like, your name at the end of the day.
And even if you are, like, switched on, constantly checking, oh, making sure.
Yeah, you can't.
You don't have 360 vision.
Especially, like, when the chipper's going as well. Like, I can't hear, like, you can't really hear anything.
And you turn up around and someone's just in the work zone and you're like, what?
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah.
But yeah, people just.
So that's one thing. Maybe I think as a person coming in new to it, like, I think I might, just to make sure it's, like, really, right, this is the work zone, like, this. I think what I'm saying is I could be better at it and do that a bit better as well. Make it more obvious or just do it sort of properly, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, definitely a good idea with those, getting those sidewalk closed signs, because we were working on really quiet residential street. Yeah. So even though we don't really have the authority to close the sidewalk, there's not many people walking down there. It was like, you know, there was no shops around, no high street, so there's not many, many people walking around. So yeah, it's definitely something that I'm gonna get and just whenever that we're in that situation, it's because it completely made sense.
Because well, even that one person,
yeah, even when I got down from the tree and so you were, like, Connor was climbing, I think Tom was chipping, and somebody walked down the laneway and was, like, walking towards me, walked past the cones, and I saw them and I was like, no, just stay over there, I'm coming to talk to you. And he carried on walking. I was like, no, stop, I'll come, like, beyond the cones. And he was like, what? And I was like, and all, you know, and then he wanted to talk to me about something completely unrelated to trees, something about his sewer being backed up, and they thought that we might know something about it. I was like, what?
But yeah, it is like the residences, the local people, like, just walk under. And thing is, like, as well, a new person coming into it, to be firm with people, even though they are the client, if it's not, it's my job to, like, control that underneath the tree, make sure it's safe. And, like, a few times I've kind of been too nice about it. I've said, oh, just try and keep indoor, don't you come out this door. And I feel like sometimes you need to stress it, right, don't use this door, like, while we're working, like, don't, you're not coming in the back garden, sort of thing. So, and it's one of those things that you probably gloss over until something does go wrong, and then it's like, oh,
yeah,
shoulda, woulda,
shoulda been more firm.
Yeah,
yeah. When, like, that's a really good point. When we're on site, as soon as we're setting up the work site, we're in control. Like, we
take over
even
that area.
Yeah, even when we're talking to the clients, like, they're the first people to say, right, if, you know, if you want to watch, then stay in your house, or if there's enough space,
yeah,
like, from their house to the garden where we're working, yeah, feel free to stand back as long as you're safe. But, like, if they're, if we tell them and we, like, show authority, then they're not gonna have a problem with it, because we're, you know, we're talking about their safety, and it's our work site at the end of the day. They're paying us to come in to do some work. We need to keep everybody safe. And the same with the public. Like, the public, you know, the general public is a bit more, it's a bit more awkward, because some people do want to, like, whinge and complain and, like, have a go at you, and, but at the end of the day, it's for their safety as well.
Yeah.
And they might feel inconvenienced. They might feel, oh God, of what I've got across the road, or, you know, we're going to have to take a couple of minutes before we can let them out of the driveway, or anything like that. But
gotta do it.
Yeah, we've got to do it. And I think the more authority you show, and the more straight you are with them, rather than saying, you know, being a bit
willy nilly.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just being not quite as forceful, they can kind of take advantage of that, can't they?
Give them an inch, they'll take a mile, won't they?
Yeah,
I think that's one thing.
Yeah, but that's good that you already kind of picked up on that and you noticed that. And it's good that coming in with fresh eyes, knowing what looks to you, is this safe, is this unsafe? Because once you've worked in tree work for a while, I think, like what I was saying last week, you can almost get tunnel vision on what your routine practices are. Right, we do this when we get to site, we do that. And sometimes you kind of skip a couple of steps or something. And so you coming in with fresh eyes, you can actually say to us, if there's something that you see that we're not doing, yeah, talk to people or go and talk to the client and tell them they can't come out. And, yeah. What do you reckon?
Good stuff, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll call it a day. You can go and drive a new car.
Yeah, sweet.
Do you want to tell everyone what you're driving now?
Toyota RAV2.
The RAV2.
The RAV2.
Moving up in the world, mate, aren't you?
Yeah. No Forerunner, unfortunately, but...
Yeah.
Keeping it Toyota.
Good old reliable.
Yeah. Tom's moved house. It's been an eventful week.
Oh, mate. I'm moving house in 3 weeks. It was a hard... What day was it really hard when we had the order you did? Was that on Wednesday?
Yeah.
What day... Well, anyway,
yeah, it was Wednesday.
We had pretty tough days, like, because we had to walk the wood quite a bit. And then I had to move house in the evening. Oh, that was rubbish. But the missus is happy, so...
That's the main thing.
That's, yeah.
I have to keep the missus happy.
Yeah.
That's it.
But we were in, so I'm going to sleep well this weekend, I think.
Refresh.
Yeah.
For next week. All right, we're going climbing tomorrow.
Yeah.
Where are we going to go?
We're going to go on there where you're moving to. So, yeah, we're going to show Tom a few basics.
Yeah.
Get up.
I'll buy the stevias. We'll get wild on them.
Zevia.
That's stevia.
What's in them?
Yeah, stevia. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
you can do some swings tomorrow.
We're gonna show you the bring it back to basics, aren't we?
Yeah.
Strip it back to basics. Yeah. Show you the
Prusik no poly,
English Prusik, the body thrust technique.
That's what I want.
Yeah. Enjoy it. Yeah. No further Sanders. No near Sanders.
I wish I hadn't booked onto this gym class now at 5 o'clock today, but.
It'll
be good fun.
Fun and games.
Nice.
All right.
One.
Cool.
Cheers, boys. Good week. Thank you. Thanks,
absolutely.
Appreciated.
Have a good one.
This podcast was sponsored by Jobber. Thank you, Jobber, for all the support you give us and for sponsoring our podcast. Jobber is an awesome software that I use to run my business. They're an awesome company, awesome crew that support us and support all the stuff we do and get on board. So thank you very much to them. And click the link in the description if you want to try their product today.